What is up, internet? Again, that is my my best Chad impression. Andy, Brett, and Sam with you today. Sam is subbing in for Chad. Chad needs to take a little bit of time. He's got some personal stuff going on, so we are going to respect that. How you doing, Brett?
I'm doing good, Andy. I can't get over that intro. If Chad heard you, he might feel a little threatened.
Threatened by with the professionalism of the intro?
Well, I mean, you just sounded like, I don't know. Do you do this for a living?
No, I don't. We do it on a regular basis, but not no money yet. Although there is an announcement coming very soon about that. But I wanted to have Chad back on board before we drop that bomb. So Sam has been on a couple of times. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing good.
Good. I guess I should get the tagline in there, as Chad always pumps that out. So this is the No Excuses Podcast, the Team Ability No Excuses Podcast, bringing real talk to disabilities with no excuses. So today, really, because Chad's not here, we're going to talk about Brett going back to the gym first time in, 7 years, sir?
It's probably been 6 for sure.
Okay. And you and I had been talking for quite a while about the kind of programs that would work for you, kind of stuff you could do, and just really, the distance, it didn't really make it practical to, I could have put a program together, but I wouldn't be able to kind of walk you through it. And basically just made a decision to join a gym, and even got yourself a trainer, right? So how are things going?
You know, not too bad. I actually feel 100 times better than I did before. And it's only been 3 or 4 sessions. I think that when I relate it back to being on the ice playing hockey, I feel that I've got a little bit more energy on the ice. And my cardio is still garbage, and I've got a long way to go, but it's the little things sometimes.
Yeah, right on. Sam, how's your New Year's resolution of being a little bit healthier? How's that going?
It is going actually very well, and the test really came today, because a couple of nights ago we had a few friends over, and we had about 5 bags of chips left, and 4 of them, I think, were opened, and I didn't touch any of them today outside of lunch.
Hey, good for you.
Yes, I was pretty pleased with that achievement.
Good for you. Well, to keep this theme going, I actually never shared this on the podcast yet, but back before Thanksgiving, so at the end of September, beginning of October, I had a really bad injury. I took a really bad fall, as I'm prone to do, and I actually ended up really hurting myself, and tried to go back to the gym a few times, and just out of pure stubbornness, I thought I could push through, and finally decided that I needed to actually really take a serious break. And last week I got back to the gym for the first time, like on a regular routine, and I'm feeling it this week for sure. So I'm right there with you, Brett. Maybe not as intense as you are, but definitely feeling sore, and but at the same time excited to be back in a good routine. And man, as you get older, you really got to take the time to recover. And it was very, very frustrating for quite some time. So,
Brett, what time do you go to the gym?
I'm a night guy. I wouldn't get out of bed for anything, including going to the gym.
That's amazing. So I got a question for both of you, actually, in regards to the gym. Do you guys feel that when people see you at the gym, do you, because Andy, I know we've spoken about how sometimes people with disabilities can become inspirations, and you and I have spoken about why that can be a good thing, why it can be a bad thing. Do you sometimes feel that even when you go to the gym, that people kind of use you as like kind of an inspiring, wow, look at that guy going to the gym, like I really need to go. Do you feel that there's a knock-on effect there?
Yeah, I mean, people flat out said that to me, like, man, if you get here every day, there's no reason why I can't. And I mean, I guess they mean it in a positive way, but I just, well, you guys know I'm at the gym at 4:30, up at 4, and at the gym at 4:30, quarter to 5, just because I like to get in and get out. Like, I like to get my work done. So if I go when there's a lot of people there, like, people just, that kind of stuff happens more, obviously, because there's more people. So, and I'm not trying to be rude. I just, my workouts are set up so that there's very minimal rest, and I'm always doing something so that they can just be more efficient and I can get out of there quicker. And I find that doing it early in the morning, there's people that are as insane as I am. So most people that are there that early are there for the same thing. Whereas if I go later, yeah, you always get those people that want to talk. And I don't know. I don't know if it's just me, but I find that because I have a disability, I'm more approachable. Kind of like what you're saying, like, people just feel comfortable to come up. Oh, what are you working on today? What are you doing? And again, I'm not trying to be rude. I just don't. I'm not there to socialize. I'm there to exercise. So, so yes, the long-winded answer to your question is yes, absolutely, that happens. And it's not that I'm not comfortable with it. I just want to get in and get out. So, I don't know, in your 4 sessions, Brett, have you had that kind of stuff happen? Or
it hasn't happened, and I don't anticipate it happening. And to be perfectly honest with you, if it does happen, I really don't care. I'm at the gym to serve a purpose for myself. I'm not at the gym to serve a purpose for anybody else.
No, absolutely.
So if it comes to light where somebody approaches me and says, whatever, I find it great that you're here, blah, 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 I'll take it with a grain of salt. I'll obviously acknowledge them and thank them and just go on my way. If I'm inspiring somebody, I'm inspiring somebody. The fact that I have a disability shouldn't matter. If I'm inspiring somebody for the simple fact that just that I'm in the gym, despite the fact that I'm in a wheelchair, it doesn't matter. I don't care.
Yeah. Right on. So I we haven't talked at length about the kind of stuff you're doing. I just, I follow just basically online. And, are you comfortable with your routine? Is it geared towards hockey? And, one thing I want to get into a little more detail about, and you can answer the first part of the question, first things first, and then I'll ask my next question. But anyways, so
it's really funny that you're asking me about my routine, because leading into these gym sessions, I've got a number of friends who are personal trainers or know what they're doing in the gym in relation to a person with a disability, yourself included. So I asked around. I said, you think you can throw a workout routine together for me? And my original plan, and I still think I can stick to my guns, is to take things that I from different people and see what works and what doesn't. So I'm still in this feeling out process, even though I'm four sessions in. And I like the idea of being able to adapt. When you're going to the gym, in my personal opinion, and in my experience so far, when you're going to the gym late at night or after work when everybody else is there, you really don't know what's available in terms of equipment and what's not. So if you can adapt with whatever you're handed or whatever's at the gym, then I think you're better off.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you been through your routine once? Like, is your routine like a 4-day routine, or do you just kind of show up and your trainer kind of decides on the fly?
Yeah, it's funny, Andy, because I after this first session, I asked him. I said, "So, did you know that I had a disability?" First of all, he told me no. Second one was, "Did you have a plan coming into this?" And he said no. So he's literally trying to do things on the fly, and that's fair, really, because he's not used to somebody with mobility challenges, which I think I get, because I hardly see people with mobility challenges in the gym, at least one-on-one in real life. I see them all over social media. But it's one of those things where like, if he's going by the seat of his pants, then I completely understand. We'll go through what works and what doesn't. If we try something that works and I like it and I'm feeling that it's effective, great. If we go through something and we realize it doesn't work or it's not effective, then we'll just drop it.
Right. Lack of a better term, walk us through the process. You weren't happy with where you were, like, physically, and decided to bite the bullet, join the gym, and then you don't pick your trainer. They just kind of set you up with one, or like, how does that work?
Yeah, so in relation to the trainer, it was kind of baptismal by fire. You get whatever's left over, which is fine. I seem to get along with this guy pretty good. He's sarcastic, and Andy and our listeners know that I'm pretty damn sarcastic sometimes. So we get along. We get along very well in that regard. I'm learning things just as much as he's learning things.
One of the things, and this is what I held off talking about, but one of the things you posted was one of your workouts was visualizing how you would use your legs if they worked. Am I getting that correct, or is that?
If they worked better.
If they worked better.
If they worked better, because obviously I use a wheelchair. I can pivot transfer, so I do have the ability to stand briefly, or wait, I guess weight bear would be a better term. But we're just trying to figure out if I can start firing my glutes, if I can build up some more muscle in that area, and see if that affects me positively going forward.
See, so that makes sense to me, I guess. But when I read it, I was just like, this trainer is just being lazy for this session, right? Like,
no. So I guess if I explain it further, he's got me doing a physical activity. But when I'm doing the physical activity, I'm supposed to close my eyes and really concentrate on the muscle group that I'm working out.
Okay.
So in that sense, it does make sense to me. I mean, again, I'm not a personal trainer, and I haven't been in the gym in 5 years. So I don't know what's going on really, but when he broke it down into layman's terms, it did make a little bit more sense.
Right on, man. So you're comfortable there? You feel like you can go on your own and you know what you're doing?
I guess the test will be in a week or so.
Right, because then your sessions are over?
Because my sessions are over. But then again, like I told you, I've got some pretty great resources. I've got you to lean on if I have any questions. I've got a number of friends who have been willing to try to walk me through a workout from afar. So I think we're on the right path. It's just a matter of trying to stay motivated.
Yeah, well, I can help you out with that for sure. It's pretty. We're in pretty regular contact, and if you start slacking, I will. I'll definitely let you know.
Yeah, no, I have no doubt.
But any advice to anybody, adaptive athlete, weekend warrior, thinking about going to the gym? What do you got to tell them?
Just do it. Bite the bullet and go do it. You're probably not going to have fun for the first few times, but if you get into a routine, there's absolutely no reason why you aren't able to stick with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't remember if you said this on the air or off, but you're seeing a result even playing hockey. You're starting to see the benefits, eh?
Yeah, a little bit. I feel a little bit more energized being on the ice even after a game. Like I'm tired, but I'm not to the point where I'm throwing up gas. And before, there would be times where I would be throwing up gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to be perfectly honest with you, I'm embarrassed to tell you that because my level of hockey isn't that high.
Yeah, but it's still
no. But it just means that I was out of shape. I'm still out of shape, but incrementally, I'm getting less out of shape. I'm getting better. I'm able to keep up. I'm able to. I'm not tired.
Yeah. Right on, man. Well, I said this to you. I also posted online. I'm proud of you. Like I said, you've been talking about doing it for a while, and the distance didn't really make it feasible for us to connect. We were trying to think of ways where we could kind of meet in the middle, and it just that didn't work. So I'm proud of you, man. And little aside, you started posting recaps to the Ability Fitness page. So anybody listening wants to follow along with the journey, they can log on to the Facebook. Are you just doing Facebook or are you doing Instagram too? I can't remember.
No, I'm just going to do Facebook for now, and look for an update tomorrow around this time, because I usually leave the gym, hop in my car, and do an update as soon as I hop in my car. So I'm at the gym from, I believe, 6 to 7 o'clock, and I'll probably have an update no later than 7:45.
Awesome. So Ability Fitness on Facebook, just search that, and get to see Brett's ugly mug, and just follow along with his process. Process? Progress. Either one. Let's bring Sam back in because we've been talking for almost 15 minutes without him. So one of the things, again, we're going to talk about because Chad's not here. Chad's not a baseball fan. So Sam actually is a very big baseball fan. And so are you, Brett. So am I. And one of the things we want to talk about for a while has been the sign ceiling. That's a mouthful, hey? Sign-stealing scandal. Houston Astros, everybody's questioning their championships, and the depth of the the sign stealing is pretty involved. So I was saying to you, Brett, off the air, Sam and I, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on who you ask, we work together. So when the story broke, we talked about it quite a bit. And Sam, why don't you just start with like, how did you start getting into baseball? Being from England, I don't imagine it's very popular over there. And but like I said, you're a pretty big fan. So why don't you give us a little bit of background?
Yeah, I mean, I love sports in general, and very much grew up playing as many as I could, and then I married into a family that loves baseball. And so, I mean, the first time I met my wife's dad, like he kind of taught me the rules, and then I went back to England, kind of forgot them all. Came back to Canada. He taught me all the rules again. And I just loved the, some of the real finer details, the kind of psychological aspect of baseball that, and some of the statistical aspect too, that you don't really get in sports like kind of soccer or rugby that I had grown up with, and even to a degree cricket, which I also played. Like, there's a degree of it, of kind of playing the stat game, but not quite like it is in baseball. And so I just kind of fell in love, and then just decided I wanted to learn as much as I could and keep up with it as best I could. And I've really loved it ever since I started. Like, I subscribe to MLB TV, pretty much have it running if I'm at home the entire time, just watching any game I can watch. I really love it.
As soon as the details started coming out of the scandal, Brett, right away you were like, guys, I know we're not a sports podcast, but we have to talk about this. And again, shout out to Chad. He is not a baseball fan, but he really didn't want to do it. And but what are your thoughts on everything that happened?
You know, I was absolutely floored when I found out. And I mean, when I say floored, I probably shouldn't have been surprised. Cheating happens all over the place in every single sport we watch on television. We remember the controversy with the Flategate with the New England Patriots. And I was interested to find out how they were cheating, as opposed to understanding that they actually did cheat.
Yeah, I mean, again, Sam and I, we talk sports quite a bit, and I remember, Sam, you sent me the article, and I remember I literally typed back right away, it's not a big deal, everybody does it. And then I think it said everything's overblown right now, like it'll pass like everything else. Like the Flategate's a great example. There are people that have very strong feelings about it, but then all the details started coming out in the extent of what they were doing. It's incredible. And yeah, Sam, as a relatively new baseball fan, I guess it doesn't even matter that you're relatively new, but what were your thoughts when, like, and again, I did a complete 180. I was like, it's not a big deal. It's overblown. And then, the details came out, and I was like, they're cheaters, right? So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real difficulty with baseball is that there is so much cheating that is allowed within the rules, right? So, like, no one gets annoyed at the catcher moving his glove to bring that ball to frame the pitch back into the zone. to a degree, like even like you're trying to steal a base, right? Like it is not like it's actually cheating, but like you're always trying to gain that extra bit. You're trying to steal signs from second base. No one seems like the catcher has a whole bunch of signs to try and stop that from happening. But I think one of the things that struck me really early on with this story was that it for me came across like everyone knew that they were doing something wrong. And nobody, it seems, in the organization had the courage to stand up at the time and say, actually, this is wrong. And everyone was so all out to win a World Series, and that they kind of sold their soul, as it were, to get it. And I think for me, I just find that really sad. I find it sad that that the character of all these people has been revealed and shown that they'll do whatever it takes. And as a, I think mostly as a sport lover, I think that's a real shame. I think it's a real shame when anyone cheats, like when you hear people who use performance enhancing drugs, right? Like it's a shame to hear that people do whatever it takes and that the natural game isn't enough. And I always find that, I always find it disappointing. And I always hope, whenever I hear the stories come out, I do always hope that, you know what, I'm sure they just ate a granola bar and it just happened to have something on it. Like I'm always one of those people. But I was very quickly believing that the Astros are cheated in this circumstance. And it's even weird now. Like I read today, Morton, the pitcher Morton, he came out kind of saying, oh, I wish I'd had the courage to kind of stand up and say, no, this isn't right. It's like, well, it's all very well now. But there was a lot of people who refused to say anything. And I'd go so far as to say, like, I really do think that that World Series should be taken away from them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, and again, it's all been substantiated, obviously, or they wouldn't have moved forward. But that the depths that they went to, like the details in the cheating, it's just insane. And I don't know how you justify it. And I was the guy that said it's no big deal. Basically what you're saying, it's part of the game, but the lengths that they went to, I couldn't believe it. And
it's had some really interesting knock-on effects. Like the other day I read like Pete Rose kind of now going after the MLB because of his situation being banned by MLB from the Hall of Fame and that kind of stuff. Now he's kind of saying, how come these guys, nothing's going to go towards them? And even just today, the Blue Jays, I don't know if you guys remember the Blue Jays pitcher Mike Bolsinger. He was like a relief pitcher. I think he maybe pitched like half a season at most.
He had a cup of coffee.
Sorry?
He had a cup of coffee with the Jays.
Well, yeah, he's now suing the Astros.
I did read that.
So like it's I mean, I do think it's gonna carry on for a while.
So none of us are Astros fans, but as do you think that would change our point of view? It's so big, I don't think it would.
Well, let's just think about this for a second, on a grander scale, I guess. Think about the fact that the Astros have fired their manager. The Red Sox have fired their manager.
Because he was with the Astros at the time.
The Mets hired a manager And within a week, they fired him because he was with the Astros at the time. Like this, this story is like, this is bigger than baseball. And it sounds very cliche. This is bigger than baseball.
Yeah, I remember and that was the reason you wanted to talk about it, was because it's so huge. And it's kind of, it definitely goes beyond baseball. And, well, like you said already, Sam, I don't know how these players were like, yeah, we're competing within the rules. Like, every sport has gray areas, right? But I don't know that any of them could sit back and be like, yeah, you know what? We're okay. We're straddling that line, but we're within the rules here. Like, everybody knew what they were doing. And I think that was that's at least where I'm at. Like,
and you know what? I don't know if it's funny or if it's sad. I'm still trying to figure out my emotions with this. But attendance numbers in Major League Baseball have been dwindling for years. I really feel like this is going to ruin Major League Baseball.
Really?
I really think that it's going to take an awful lot for fans and consumers that purchase tickets and purchase the MLB network and concessions, souvenirs, and stuff like that. I really think it's going to cause the teams to take an enormous hit. And I don't see how you bounce back from that.
The ripple effect, like we're talking about, like, I don't know if you guys follow, but Altuve won the MVP, so now the runner-up is saying, well, really, that's mine because he's a cheater, right? So, like, where does it stop?
Yeah, and fair enough.
Yeah.
Right, like, I'd be so mad. I'd be so annoyed.
Was it MVP or was it All-Star? Oh, it was an All-Star. It was an All-Star appearance, but...
But that's the funny thing, too, right? Because there are pictures and videos of Altuve coming around third base after he's hit a bomb, holding on to his jersey, because apparently it's been reported that he wore a wire.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess it would buzz on his chest if he knew that a fastball was coming.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you're right. I don't know how baseball moves on from this, but funny enough, like with Houston, with their recent success, I always followed them because they're not the traditional baseball market, right? So they're the team that if they were in the playoffs and the Jays were out, which recently they have been, that would be the team that I follow because they're not the Yankees, they're not the Red Sox, they're not the Dodgers, so, and I mean, they were good, so I enjoyed watching them, but it'll be interesting to see the kind of seasons these guys have without any help. But
yeah, I honestly don't actually think it'll be, like, I don't think the drop-off will be that big, but I just think that the thing with baseball is it's a game of such small margins. Right, like, and that it's such a small margin. So I shouldn't think their drop off would be that big, but it'd be, as a whole, it's big enough that, yeah, as I said, I just don't think they should have that World Series. And I think I would have to say it through gritted teeth, but I think I'd feel the same way if it was the Toronto Blue Jays as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because as I said, like, none of us are Astros fans, so we can sit here and say whatever we want. But if it was the Jays, would we feel?
You know, like, I remember when I played a soccer game once, and I mean, obviously, this is not the same thing, but like, I remember I played a soccer game, and one of my team pretended to go down injured, and it happened to be his brother who was in goal. And so everyone just stopped watching, and the goalie had the ball in his hands when he went down injured. And so everyone stopped watching and thought, like, you know what? They're just going to kick the – he's going to kick the ball out. But the goalie didn't. He kicked it to his brother who was lying down. His brother got up and went off and scored. And no one was there to stop him. And we won the game 2-1. That was the winning goal. And I was the captain. And I made the decision at 2-1 to allow the other team to score a free shot. And they missed it, which was very annoying. And they missed the free shot that we gave them. And but I just remember being like, I still have that the winner's medal, but it doesn't really feel like a winner's medal. It was just like, yeah, we didn't really win it. It's a really weird feeling.
Yeah, yeah, I get that for sure. We're all baseball fans, and we know there are unwritten rules in baseball. How many Astros do you think get thrown out this year?
None of them.
You don't think any of them?
No.
I think if I'm them, I'm just going to stay quiet. I think if I'm them.
I don't think that as much as Major League Baseball has proof that the Astros cheated, I don't think Major League Baseball has proof that an individual on a team cheated.
Oh, fair enough.
The problem is this is a team sport. So if unless there's concrete proof that someone like Jose Altuve did cheat, like you're not going to be able to kick a guy off a team for a year, suspend him, whatever.
Fair enough. So back to your comment earlier, Sam, do you think Pete Rose gets in now?
I wouldn't think so. I think once you open that door, I think you're in a bit of trouble, aren't you? There's then a few other people who are not making the Hall of Fame from drugs and stuff that I think they suddenly start jumping in. I mean, I think what Brett said really, like, I think that I imagine if there was like concrete evidence that Altuve was wearing that electronic, like the vest that they said, like if it was absolutely solid, like, I mean, there's a chance maybe that it might start getting a little bit more severe, but until then, I don't see much else happening.
I mean, if you think about it, who are the players or who are the managers, who are the people in baseball that have either been thrown out of the Hall of Fame or not invited to the Hall of Fame for things that they've done? And the only two people that I can think of are Pete Rose and Joe Jackson for the Black Sox scandal back when back in the 20s.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, and back in the 20s, how did you even figure out that they did what they did? There was no, the technology back then was a hell of a lot different than it is today.
No, for sure.
So their investigation tools were a little bit different, obviously. I'm standing firm on this. I don't believe that cheaters deserve to be in the Hall of Fame or be rewarded for cheating. The fact that a guy like Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens isn't in the Hall of Fame for juicing or whatever, I stand firm on that as well.
So, okay, let me ask you this then. You don't – Altuve is probably on pace to go to the Hall of Fame, but you don't think he's getting in now?
It's really hard to say, Andrew.
Yeah.
Because this is so fresh that I haven't been able to process that far in advance.
Yeah, I don't know if he might flame out and won't keep up his current numbers and not even garner consideration anyways. But yeah, who knows? It's an interesting topic, and I'm sure we could talk about it for a couple hours at least, but I want to be respectful of you guys' time, so we'll wrap that there, and if we if more stuff comes to light, we can always kick chat off for another episode and bring Sam back. So I want to move on to the offside, and it's actually very relevant to the fitness stuff we were talking about earlier. I lead a group session in a rec center here in Hamilton. I believe it is, it's one of the newer ones here, so it's fully accessible, automatic doors, the whole nine yards, right? Even the accessible washrooms are low energy, so they're not, the doors are powered, but they use low power. The city went all out, so it's actually really cool to see the newer building. At the time, they made sure everything was up to code accessibility wise, so very cool. The organization that I work for this program, they do all their winter programs out of this rec center. But anyways, point of the story, I finished a class, and I had somebody come with me because the class size was so big. So I brought in a friend of mine. We were leaving, and I said, I'm just going to use the washroom before we go. And so I hit the button to open up the door, and it opens. And I wheel in, and the light is not on. So I'm looking around for the light switch. And then I remember, oh, it's automatic. And because, again, the building is state-of-the-art. So I'm kind of wheeling around looking for it, looking for the sensor. Can't find the sensor, can't find the switch. So I go back out, ask my buddy, who's able-bodied. I was like, can you just – I can't seem to find the light switch. And I should clarify, I'm in my wheelchair because that's how I teach the majority of my classes, is in my wheelchair. So I had wheeled into the bathroom. And so go back out to ask my buddy for some help. And he walks into the bathroom, and the light turns on. So this fully accessible building has accessible washrooms, everything. But the sensor for the light in the accessible washroom is above the standard wheelchair user. So you have to be able-bodied to walk in, turn the light on, because there's no switches, because it's all sensors. So
you need to put a flag on the back of your wheelchair.
Yeah, maybe that's it, right? Like,
Andy, that's happened to me before, actually. Something similar. Anyway, I'd be in a handicapped washroom, independent of any stall or whatever, and same sort of situation where the light's on a sensor, and I'm sitting there doing my business, and obviously I'm not moving very, very much because I'm trying to concentrate on my business, and then the light goes off.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure where the sensor is, so I start moving a little bit, light's still off.
Yeah.
So, I mean, by the luck of the Irish or whatever, I can reach for my phone that's on my chair and maybe turn the light on my phone.
Right.
But you know, I completely get that. It's a nuisance. It's annoying. And it's just a poor design.
Yeah. Is it like, I wanted to like whoever designed that room. Yeah. You had one, like everything else is amazing, but you had that one job that you were this close, right? Like, and the guy I was with is actually the guy that came to the wrestling event with us, Aravind, and he walked in, and it took him a second to figure out what happened, and then he just started, like, he was dying. He was laughing so hard. But no, that's my offside for this week. Not a huge thing, but I was a couple seconds away from the door closing and being in the bathroom, pitch dark, not unsimilar to you, Brett. So anyways,
I mean, you know, that sucks. But you're really not too concerned until the lights are actually off and you're trying to figure out what to do with your pants down around your ankles.
Yeah. 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 That's no fun for anybody. You have anything to say before we close it off for tonight, Brett?
No, except for the fact that, Andy, I want to thank you for continuing to have me part of this, and now having me as a admin on our Facebook group. I'm going to be continuing to update everybody on my progress. As long as people continue to enjoy it, I'm having an awful lot of fun. And to be perfectly honest with you, I don't necessarily need the motivation, but updating all of you helps me motivate myself a little bit more. So
that's awesome, man. And yeah, no, like I said, all of a sudden I can't talk, but we got a few things that have been in the works for a while. And once Chad's back, we're gonna drop that bombshell. So thanks for listening. This is the Team Ability No Excuses podcast. We are available on all your major podcast outlets. And Chad always likes to plug Apple. So if you are an Apple guy, we are on Apple Podcast. That was brutal, but we're going to leave it because it's funny. So have a good night, guys. And thanks again.